Hello and welcome to the V2 Football Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Kendrick, and joining me for this edition of the show, it's broken but glorious regular and now football author, Oliver Newman.
Hey, Anthony, how are you doing?
I'm very good, thank you. Very good, very good. Good to get you on the show.
Yeah, it's been a while. Last time we were talking about England in the World Cup.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about England a bit more tonight. As well as that, we'll talk about whether we think Liverpool or City will win the title, Solskjaer being appointed as the United manager, and also Oliver, your book, and Birmingham City in general this season.
Pogba! It's Mbappe! Oh my word!
We can't start with anywhere else really. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has been appointed as Man United boss. He's got a 3-year contract. First of all, I presume you don't think there's any argument that he deserves the job?
Oh, absolutely not. No, he's been fantastic for Manchester United. As a player, he was tremendous, the babyface assassin. I remember he scored 4 goals at Nottingham Forest, in particular. And then he's come in as the manager. Everyone said, you know, they need to kind of be the Manchester United of old. He's come in and he's the results speak for themselves. You know, he's performed fantastically up until now. The PSG result obviously sticks out, the away leg in particular. Mm-hmm. And the Premier League results have been fantastic as well. So, yeah, he probably should have got it before now, to be honest. But, there was no one else.
I'll come on to the timing in a sec, but I do want to ask, when he took over, he was United was sixth in the table, didn't look like anywhere near the top four, and it was more of a question as whether they were going to finish sixth or whether someone like Wolves or that would spring a surprise. There was so much negativity around the club and how that's all changed. And also when Solskjaer was appointed, people looked at, you know, what he did at Cardiff and said, hang on a minute, is it, you know, seeing it as a bit of a joke appointment, United writing off the season and looking forward to next season. It's crazy how much, you know, expectations have changed around the club and the positivity around the club, how much it's changed.
Yeah, in terms of the Cardiff job, maybe it just wasn't right for him. For myself, I didn't think that Mourinho was right for Manchester United. Always felt that way. I just didn't feel like the right fit. But with Solskjaer being a, you know, Manchester United player from years ago, he was there when they were playing the kind of football that Manchester United want to be playing. You know, the free-flowing attacking football, and he's brought that back, really. You look at Pogba, he looks a completely different player in particular. You know, his assists have gone up, his goals have gone up. He's just rejuvenated the club, in all honesty. I'm not sure about, like, possible joke appointment and stuff because of what Cardiff wanted. Like I said, it's just some teams just fit for some managers just fit for certain teams. You know, when Gianfranco Zola came to Birmingham City, for example, if you go on his playing career, we should be in the Premier League right now.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, from a management perspective, he almost took us down.
Yeah. And in terms of the timing of his appointment, I mean, it's you mentioned maybe he should have got the job earlier, and, you know, given the form, I think it was only a matter of time when he got the job. Do you think it might have been more sensible for the club to wait until the end of the season before, you know, make rubber stamping it, making it official, as it were?
No, I think give it him now. I like what he said. You know, I have Sky Sports News on regular when I'm at home and stuff, and he says that, like, the hard work starts now. But we can put the markers down for next season, so he can now seek out who he wants to bring in next season, as opposed to starting in May, June time, and then looking out for players because he's got the job. He's got the job on, March 28th. So he's got from now until the end of the season to pick out who he wants to bring in. And that's a lot better than, starting afresh in June. Mm-hmm.
I think you're right. I think that's a really good point. I just hope that making it permanent doesn't destabilise the season or anything like that.
I think it'll add to it. Solskjaer's come in and he's rejuvenating the place. What is going to happen now, between now and the end of the season, in a negative way? I can't see a change, and it can only be positive. This is what they've kind of wanted, stable manager who, clicks with the fans and clicks with players, and that's exactly what they've got. If it had been up in the air, maybe it would have affected the Champions League, maybe it would have affected the top four race, but now it's all been settled. Manchester United are in a really good position.
And some have questioned whether players the top calibre players will want to play under Solskjaer, whether they want to play under a so-called elite manager. Looking at players who want to leave, though, who wanted to leave under Mourinho, the place looks so much happier. And I think for people to come out and say that they won't want to play under Solskjaer is a incorrect statement, really.
Oh, 100%. It's been said today that agents and players are starting to get in contact because of what's happened with Solskjaer being given the 3-year contract. So that just goes to show that statement's false, to be honest. If I was a player and had the choice between Jose Mourinho and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, I'd play for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Yeah, wait, go on.
I just think he gets the players. Don't get me wrong, Jose Mourinho's done fantastic when he Champions League with Porto. That was outstanding. He's had a hell of a management career, but he's great with the teams that kind of work for him. And then, like I said, I didn't think it worked for Manchester United. With regards to Solskjaer, he's the kind of manager that put his arm around you and say, don't worry about that shot, you'll score the next one. Look what he's done for Rashford, for example. He looks another completely different player. You'd want to play for Solskjaer because I would imagine heart on his sleeve, he'll protect you if he can, in terms of pushing you to be that little bit better and stuff. And I think he'd be a joy to play for, to be honest.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think what's damning is that, players like Martial and Pogba and others, you were sort of I was almost wanting them to leave United for the good of their careers. And, me as a United fan saying that's pretty, pretty bloody damning, to be honest.
It's 100%, but now, you being a United fan, looking at the situation with Solskjaer, I bet you can't wait to see who comes in, and if it's a youth player, he's going to reach his potential with Solskjaer.
Exactly.
Lingard's going to get there. Rashford's, as good as he was, getting even better. Pogba, like I said, he's a completely different player. All you need now is for Lukaku to really show his potential that he had for the longest time. You just need him to fit into your system, and then United will be looking to win the title again.
Yeah, sure, and he's shown that in flashes under Solskjaer, the away performance against PSG, for example, and there's been a few other games where Lukaku has really shown up, and I think he was probably one of the few under Mourinho who would continue to fight and give everything for United. I know at times he gets criticised because he does miss a few chances, and perhaps technically he's not as good as some of the other elite strikers, but I think in terms of his work rate and his, desire, he's been very good for United. I think
it's just finding a system that works for him personally. You can play him as a target man and then play a Martial or a Rashford off him. I think that would work for him. Obviously, we've got Pogba maybe in the hold as a playmaker. You know, as we'll come on to later, or you know, the formation that I tend to use on Football Manager, which is four defenders, two midfield players, holding midfield players, one attacking player maker with two inside forwards, and a target man. And I think that kind of formation would work a treat for Manchester United if you aren't playing it already.
Yeah. The top four race in general, Tottenham sit third on 61, Arsenal 60, United 58, and then Chelsea 57. So there's 4 points separating the four sides. You assume City and Liverpool are going to get, you know, the top two positions. Do you think United, who do you think will get top four? I'll put it another way. Put you on the spot.
Cheers for that. I've got Arsenal friends, I've got... let's think about it. Well, Tottenham have kind of fallen off the pace, which is unfortunate because they were up there for, you know, possibly winning the league a short while ago. They've got top quality. If players can come back from injury and be as good as they were before, they'll be in for a share of third maybe. Arsenal is a difficult one because it depends which Arsenal turns up. Chelsea they've got their own internal problems, haven't they? But a quality on the day. I think with Solskjaer appointment and with Solskjaer being in the club, I think it could be United fourth, Tottenham third. And because I want a new Premier League champion, Manchester City second and Liverpool finished up.
In terms of the top four race, do you think that Tottenham opening a new stadium will make any difference? I mean, that's going to be available, I think, for their next Premier League game. I know they've done the testing a bit. They've done an under-21 game there.
It went against them when they went to Wembley, didn't it? You know what I mean? They how long did it take them to win when they were at Wembley Stadium?
Oh, they had a poor run, didn't they, initially? Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully it doesn't go against them in that way. Stadium looks magnificent. You know, everything about it screams, you know, we should be champions of Europe. We should be Premier League champions and stuff. So, hopefully it works in the right way for Tottenham. Like I said, I think they'll finish third and Manchester United will finish fourth.
So I've
got it that it'll work in the right way for them.
Fair enough. It's a difficult one to predict, isn't it? At the start of the season, I predicted both Spurs and Arsenal to finish in the top four along with City and Liverpool. Given everything, I'm going to revise my prediction and say that Arsenal will finish in the top four. I think, as you say, it does depend which Arsenal shows up, but I think they're capable of beating anyone when they do show up. I think Emery's done a fantastic job there. I also think that United will get top four. I think Spurs will just narrowly miss out, and I think Chelsea will be some way off it myself. It's a hard one to predict, isn't it? It's not like it's a cut and dry thing.
I don't see Arsenal finishing above Tottenham with Kane back and with Ali back, and I think that's exactly, you know, the team that they had before these horrific injuries and stuff, and that's all they needed, and they were still able to keep going to an extent with those injuries. So I think Emery's just still trying to figure out his formation, to be honest. You know, he needs to play Lacazette and Aubameyang, I think it is.
Yeah.
He needs to play them up front, and he's hesitant to play one or the other. If he plays both of them up front with Ozil as a playmaker, then, Arsenal would easily finish top four.
Yeah.
But he tends to... you know, Ozil's the captain, Ozil's out the team, Aubameyang's up front on his own, Lacazette's up front on his own. So, yeah, they need to kind of decide what they want. And you can't really use Premier League games to make that decision, to be honest. You need to be ready to go. That's what I mean about Arsenal. It's a bit hit and miss, really. So that's why I think Tottenham have got it together. Manchester United have got it together because of Solskjaer coming in. And yeah, that's why I think I'll be the top four along with Manchester City and Liverpool.
And you mentioned in passing that you thought Liverpool would win the league. They're currently 2 points ahead of City, having played an extra game. So, you know, not really so little separating them. What makes you think Liverpool will win it?
I want Liverpool to win it just because they're new, in all honesty. And I think it's always good to have a new Premier League champion. But when it comes down to it, people have bought the leagues, haven't they? And that's what really makes me, obviously, being a Birmingham City fan, my team's in the Championship, but it doesn't make me want to watch the Premier League or the Champions League, because, you know, PSG spent, you know, almost 200 million to buy Neymar, and it's just like, it's not how it used to be. You know, I remember, even from you know, Manchester United perspective, you'll know this. P.H. Schmeichel and Andrei Kanchelskis back in the day, they were bought for pittance, weren't they?
Yeah.
When you compare it to now, Virgil van Dijk was bought for 75 million. You know, Bayern Munich have just bought a defender as well for 68 million.
Lovely.
It's absolutely crackers, isn't it, really? I want them to win because it's something different, and I don't want Manchester City, with all the money they've got, to, you know, to be able to buy the Champions League and to be able to buy the Premier League. Although Liverpool has spent a lot of money lately, you know, it's just somebody new, and I like Jurgen Klopp. I think he's fantastic for the league. I love his passion. Really refreshing to see.
Do you think there's any argument that Liverpool might have bought the league if they do win it? Because they spent the most of any Premier League club in the summer. They bought Naby Keita, they bought Fabinho, they bought a fair few players, and did spend some significant money in the summer. So are they not buying the league as well, perhaps?
It's really unfortunate that you have to spend that much money to be anywhere near the league title, isn't it, really? It's a sad commentary on how far football has become so money orientated. It's how it has to be. It's unfortunate, but yeah, I can see where you're coming from. I mean, Alisson is the most expensive goalkeeper, isn't he? You know, so yeah, I see where you're coming from there. I just, much like when Tottenham and Leicester were going for the league title, if either of those teams had won it, it would have been good for the league.
Yeah.
If you look back on, say, the Premier League years and stuff, how many years did Manchester United win it? And then Arsenal won the title, and then Chelsea came along, and then Manchester City come along. So if Liverpool win it, and Leicester, obviously, if Liverpool win it, then there's somebody new. And then if Tottenham win it next year, for example, it'd be really good for the league to show that you could win the league regardless of, you know, what you've spent, etc. But I do see what you're saying about a lot of money being spent from Liverpool to be up there and to challenge. And like I say, it's just really unfortunate because that's what you have to do.
Yeah, no, you're right. The money in general in football is crazy. And yeah, maybe we'll come on to finance.
If you look at the Championship for a second, Anthony, Stoke has spent how much to try and get out of the Championship and back into the Premier League. And it's, you know, it doesn't always guarantee it, but it's kind of what you've got to do, because the what you get from winning the title or coming second or winning the playoff final, you know, 130 odd million or whatever, is worth it for the amount of money that you spend to try and get up there. So it's gone way too far. The money side of things, it's horrific. That amount of money has to be spent to, you know, to get yourself up there with the Premier League in terms of fighting for the title and to compete in the Champions League as well.
Well, I think I read that 2/3 of Championship clubs will run at a loss, and yeah, you know, when you're seeing transfer fees, you know, like 10, 12 million for players in the Championship, it's crazy how finances have changed that division, and yeah, as you say, it's because of the Premier League riches and all that, and
look how much agents' fees have come into the game. The agent for Paul Pogba, how much did he make off that deal?
Oh, was it tens of millions? It was like 15 million or something crazy, wasn't it? He made out of it. It's obscene exactly money.
Exactly, and then when you look at that, that's the amount of money that Newcastle paid for Alan Shearer.
Yeah.
Obviously, inflation and stuff, but it is, isn't it? It's the amount of money that Newcastle paid for Alan Shearer, which is just shocking.
Yeah. I want to move on from this. I do want to come back to the Championship later in the show, but I do want to talk about England. Played the two games against Czech Republic and Montenegro. Before I come on to some of the racism, some of the other stuff that was brought up in the game, I want to say it was two fantastic performances in both those games.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, I was talking to my dad about it, and I think a player that went under the radar, I don't know if you noticed this, Anthony, but Ross Barkley. I thought he was fantastic. You know, he come on. I'm not sure if he come on or he's in the team for Eric Dier when he got injured. But when Ross Barkley was in the team and he was, you know, pushing the team forward, that's the reason why we won 5-0 against Czech Republic. In all honesty, he was pushing everything forward. He wasn't playing backwards and square. He was, you know, pushing the ball forward up the whole time. And then obviously, Raheem Sterling scored the hat trick, which was fantastic for him. He's showing that Man City side of his game in the England team, and that's just absolutely amazing. That could be the thing that pushes us on to European and World Cup glory in the years to come, in all honesty.
Do you think that it's Pep Guardiola having a good influence on him? Because I don't think he'd be the player he is now without Pep.
It's interesting because what, you know, how would we be if he was still at Liverpool under Jurgen Klopp? I think he's done well with the, you know, the young Liverpool players coming through the ranks. So, but yeah, Pep Guardiola's got a fantastic reputation with young players, hasn't he? Coming through at Barcelona, etc. So, yeah, I think the fact that he pushes him beyond his limits is pretty amazing, to be honest. You know, he scores a few goals in the game, and Pep Guardiola's like, excuse me, Pep Guardiola's like, you can do even better than that. And I'd be thinking to myself, if I was a player, bloody hell, what do you want out of me? But it's obviously working really well at Manchester City.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was great to see him put in a great performance for England, especially after the criticism he got at the World Cup. And, you know, in the past, then questions were asked of his finishing, and I think they were fairly asked. I mean, some people on the other extreme would defend Sterling at all costs. But I think he's really developed, and this season he's been crucial for Man City, and you know, his goal rate's improved, his finishing's improved. I'm still not completely sold on him as a you know, a finisher, but he's done a much better job this season than he has in the past.
Yeah, I think he's really stepped up this season because, you know, Kevin De Bruyne has been out, hasn't he, injured. So Manchester City have needed that player to step up, and Raheem Sterling's done it on the right-hand side, and Leroy Sané's done it on the left-hand side, hasn't he? So, Yeah, and obviously Sergio Aguero's done a fantastic job as well. And to go with Gabriel Jesus, he's scored a number of goals as well, hasn't he? So goals seem to be flowing in from all angles at Manchester City. Like I said, it's just amazing to see his Manchester City form being shown at England level. You know, against Spain, he was fantastic in the Nations League, wasn't he? That's when it kind of turned for Raheem Sterling. And in these last two games, he's been incredible.
Mm-hmm. You look at a few players who were missing for England as well, you know, like Marcus Rashford and Jesse Lingard, you know, the United players, and there's numerous others as well who weren't in the squad. But, you know, other players, Hudson-Odoi's come in, we've had so many other players come in. It's a really exciting time for England when you look at, you know, players like Hudson-Odoi, like Jadon Sancho, you know, Declan Rice came in and had a good game. In terms of players, I mean, we've got a conveyor belt of young talent. It's excellent.
Oh, absolutely. You talk about Declan Rice in the game against Montenegro. He looked like he'd got the 50 caps that Jordan Henderson had got. He was just spraying it around. He was looking out for danger. He was getting his tackles in. He was passing it backwards and forwards. He gave a fantastic performance, and like you said, it's just fantastic. Callum Hudson-Odoi, you know, brilliant against Montenegro as well. You know, we went 1-0 down, and any other England team might have folded, but we just turned them over, and it was incredible to watch. Mm. It really was.
The England side itself, do you think we're capable of winning the Euros next summer?
Oh, absolutely. And the Nations League this summer as well. Uh-huh. Like you said, we've got players that can go back to under-21s.
Mm.
And that's just amazing that you've got that quality's come through and you can send it back to the under-21s to try and win an under-21 tournament. Or you can keep them in the main team. It's amazing that we can do that, really, because that's how you start winning those tournaments, like the under-20s tournament where Phil Foden come through in particular. Getting that winning habit is what we need, and if we can get that through the ranks, the different levels of English football, then it will get through to the main team, and we will win a European Championship and a World Cup. That's in our future, I think, in all honesty. It kind of feels like how the Spanish and the Germans felt about their young kids coming through.
Yeah.
But they had to reset everything, so that's what we've done slowly but surely. But we're kind of there now. There's a lot of quality in the England setup that, you know, that's there. And it's a youthful team, and it's a team that, yeah, we ain't scared to take anyone on, I don't think.
I do like that you mentioned the Nations League as well, actually, because when that tournament was announced, it was thought that no one would really care about it, but it's, you know, here anyway, and I think most of Europe's the same from things I've seen anyway in social media, etc. But how much, you know, I think fans will really get behind it in the summer, and I think, you know, it's going to get great viewing figures, and, you know, we're going to go for it. I'm really convinced of that, and, you know, it's great to see that UEFA have come up with an idea of a tournament that looks like it's worked.
Yeah, I mean, I was unsure how it worked in the beginning, I guess, but to be put in a group with Croatia and Spain, and really after work to get the results. I mean, you know, to win 2-1 in Spain, to beat Croatia, and that be the reason why we were in the semi-finals in June. If you look back at that and you look back at any of those matches, they were fantastic matches. the fan behind it 100%. I know I did, and I was, you know, cheering them. Sorry.
Sorry.
I was cheering and applauding and everything when Harry Kane, I think it was Harry Kane, scored the winner, didn't he, against Croatia. So, bring that on in June. It's a good reason to have a Sky Sports subscription, I think.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I've got to mention the racist abuse. Montenegro have been charged with racist behaviour. Raheem Sterling, Danny Rose, Callum Hudson-Odoi, all involved. Were abused, I should say. It's horrible to still see it in the game, isn't it? It must, you know, for players, for this to continue. I mean.
Yeah, it's an absolute disgrace, isn't it, really? No one should be subjected to that, in all honesty. It shouldn't be about race, creed, colour, or religion. Mm. It's just about 11-11 on a football pitch. And, you know, who wins, shake hands, and, you know, that's it. Get on to the next match. It's really, really unfortunate, to be honest.
In terms of punishment, what do you think they should do, if anything?
See, it's difficult, because is it a small minority, and then say if you excluded Montenegro from the tournament, then a small minority has made that happen. Is it a large majority that have done this? Then you've got to think about excluding from the tournament. Playing behind closed doors, if you look at all the times this has happened, has it really stopped it from happening? It hasn't. I don't know what the answer is, Anthony, to be honest. Mm. What do you think?
Well, in the past, they've been given fines, and I think to be honest, they're sort of a bit of a laughable punishment. It's not actually achieved anything. I think there has to be, you know, a game played behind closed doors or something like that. I don't think expulsion's a good idea, but I'm sort of behind the idea of they have to play the next home game behind closed doors. But it's a very difficult situation, and I think in some parts of the world, culturally, it's more acceptable to be racist. Not that that's in any way okay, but that's just the way it is in those cultures, and people need to be educated that is not acceptable to participate in any UEFA tournament.
Yeah,
it's my
100%. Like I said, the thing that concerns me is there has been matches played behind closed doors before. And the racism still continues.
Well, we played in the Nations League behind closed doors, didn't we? I think it was against Croatia.
Well, exactly. So you've got to look at it, and you've got to be like, okay, you've got to stamp this out, in all honesty. The thing that's most concerning is Kick It Out. It's been going for over 20 years now, isn't it? And, you know, it's worked to an extent. But it's just a really difficult thing, in all honesty. Horrible to be subjected to, and it's just really unfortunate. It takes the result, and we're talking about that really. Mm. The result, fantastic. Those players in particular were amazing, and England won 5-1. 5-1 in Montenegro, and that's what we should be talking about. Mm. You know, I like to talk about the positive stuff when I'm talking about things, but you've got to talk about the bad stuff as well. And yeah, here's hoping that you know, we don't talk about this in the future, and they can do something, but they've really got to stamp it out now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. I do want to move on from that, because main reason I wanted to get you on the show tonight, you have a book which is being launched very soon, A Fan's Perspective, Becoming a Football Manager. Can you tell us a bit about the book, first of all?
Well, yeah. With my other books, you know, I've taken my love of professional wrestling and wrote about them. But I decided, excuse me, with three books written on professional wrestling, I just wanted to take a little breather. And I've always loved Championship Manager and Football Manager, what it became, and obviously big fan of Birmingham City. And I got a Google Play voucher for my Christmas present and decided to download Football Manager Mobile 2019. Mm-hmm. And when I and I started playing it and what have you, I was like, okay, if I add this with being the Birmingham City manager, then I can possibly write a book about it. And that's where it kind of come from, really.
Okay, so so you've sort of documented what you've done over your managerial experience with Birmingham and translated that into something people can read and follow along with.
Yeah, exactly that. I've kind of started as a local manager, and everything that you have to do in order to get the club ready for the season. And there's lots of talk of formations and substitutions that I'd make and things of that nature. I got my Twitter followers involved when I was looking to put my team into place, and they helped me pick my team for my friendlies. And with a mixed bag of results, I decided that I wanted to change it up. So basically playing with the same team that Gary Monk has had since August, just deciding who I wanted to be in my team. So the same 18 kind of players and who I'd pick in the team and stuff. So yeah, it's kind of that, really.
That sounds really interesting. I've not played Football Manager in years, to be honest. I remember playing Championship Manager a fair bit years ago, but yeah.
Championship Manager was fantastic. I remember, and I said in the book, in a random shopping trip, I picked up Championship Manager 2, and also in the book and stuff. Don't want to give too much away, but my brother found Marcelo Salas when he was playing for River Plate and bought him for a million and turned him into a goal scoring machine. Excuse me.
Mm.
So that was fantastic for him, but I was kind of famed for my formations and tactical skill. So the formation I like to play is 4-3-1-2. So four defenders, three midfielders with one holding midfielder, two wingers, playmaker and two strikers. But the interesting thing with this game is that formation doesn't work. And the amount of times that I'd gone and played the formation and lost in a really bad way, because I played it through a few times, you see. This book isn't just organic, it's a little bit manufactured. So I'd play it through and stuff, and I just kept on getting beaten. And I was like, if I make a book where I just keep losing, it kind of makes me look like a loser, so I need to figure this out. And that's when I came up with the 4-2-3-1 formation, and that's done a lot better than the previous times that I've played.
Okay. Well, as I say, the book's going to be out very soon. What we'll do is, as soon as it's available, we'll make sure to tweet a couple of links out on our Twitter page, and put it on the website as well. If you're interested, I'm sure it's a great read, and you can check it out.
Well, yeah, I'm hoping, obviously, for Birmingham City fans, it'll be a good read. But I think for football fans in general, if you've ever wanted to manage a club, I take you through the ins and outs of exactly what would happen. You know, what happens if your star player gets injured? How can you use your youth players, your reserves? You know, formations, obviously. Who should be your captain, penalty takers? Yeah, it's all there, really. It is being, you know, like I said, the title's becoming a football manager, and it's exactly that. And it runs from the 1st of July until the 25th of December. So that's like the half season point. And basically, it's just to see if I can surpass Gary Monk and his Birmingham City by Christmas Day, basically. And that's one of the key running themes in the game. I put Gary Monk's Blues and how many points they've got compared to my points at that certain point. So I take a game, say Leeds United, for example, and whatever points I get out of that game, I add that to the points I've got during the season already and see where Gary Monk's Blues have picked up their points. And then I equal that tally up. And you can see after every game exactly how many points I've got compared to the real Birmingham City.
Gotcha, yeah. Well, as I say, we'll put a couple of tweets out to that, and I hope your book does well.
Yeah, thank you.
I want to ask about the real, Birmingham City that we see on the pitch. There's been a few things recently, but 9 points have been deducted for breaking profitability rules and profitability and sustainability rules, I should say. People are pointing the blame at Harry Redknapp for what he did when he was there bringing in players. Do you think that that's right, or?
See, it's because like Harry Redknapp came out and said that there weren't his players that were being bought in, which makes you really think, you know, when did the manager aspect of being a football manager has gone completely? Because there's no way I'd bring in players that I didn't want to be there if I'm the manager of a club. And that's why they say coach and head coach and all this. And it's just like, yeah, it's football manager or nothing for me. Directors of football, the fact that the board wants certain players and stuff. And it's like, you're not even allowed to do your job anymore if you're a football manager. So he came out and said that, you know, certain players, he didn't even buy. He didn't even want them. So I don't know how it can be his fault, in all honesty. If you're given the money and you're told to build a squad, you build a squad, don't you? So, I'm not sure I blame Harry Redknapp for that, to be honest. He came in and did a fantastic job about us not being relegated, didn't he? That's what I tend to remember Harry Redknapp for. He did a fantastic job in the brief time he was at Birmingham to stop us from getting relegated.
So I assume then if it's not Harry Redknapp, that it's the chairman and you know, some of the higher up people within the club who are responsible. I mean they're presumably the ones who decide a transfer budget and how much they can afford to spend on wages and all that. And so would you say it's their fault, or?
I'd say it's got to be. Do you know what I mean? If they're setting out money to be spent, if they're buying players that the manager doesn't want, who else can be blamed for that, to be honest? They've come out and they said, oh, well, the club was in, you know, disarray, and we had to build a new team, etc., etc. And to an extent, that's exactly what we needed to do. But at the time, you know, on transfer deadline day in August a few years ago, it was pretty pretty amazing being a Birmingham City fan, because, you know, we signed, I think, 10 players on transfer deadline day.
Yeah.
Didn't think it would come back and haunt us like it has, though. That's it's probably something that should happen in the Premier League, in all honesty, because how many teams could come up and say they've spent more in than out? It'd be really interesting, because it's a good thing. Excuse me. It's a good thing that they're trying to stop huge amounts of money being spent when you haven't got the money, or et cetera, et cetera. But this should be happening in the Premier League as well, because who out there is spending copious amounts of money and nothing ever happens to you? It's just really frustrating that it's happened to my team. But when it's happened to other teams, but they've been able to pay the way out of it, that's really frustrating.
I think that's the problem, isn't it? Financial fair play is a really good idea, and it's the right idea, but it's so poorly applied. And, you know,
the concept's a great idea. I mean, put it in across every league in the world, then.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Then you wouldn't have players like Neymar being bought for 200 million. Well, you wouldn't have 200 million.
Well, they signed Mbappe, didn't they? But they had to sign him on loan for a season with an option to buy for 100 and something million, because they couldn't sign him because of financial fair play. And when there's ways to get around it, and you can talk about Manchester City and the whole Etihad deal and all that as well. There's ways around it, and, you know, these rules need to be done better. And you know, we could probably talk about it for a whole hour if we wanted in its own podcast, really.
We could, like we said earlier, when it comes to money in the 90s, why couldn't football just stay the same as that? Do you know what I mean? I know, like, inflation and things like that, but 500 grand for a player, now you'd be lucky if we don't get to a point where you're paying 500 million for one. So, yeah, the game is just gone.
With this points deduction, and also you've lost the last four games, Birmingham have lost the last four games, that just leaves the side only 5 points above the relegation zone. Do you think that that's a risk, or do you think you'll be okay?
Well, it's difficult, isn't it, really? Because we've come into the season, and if you look at the wins that we've got, it's like, you wouldn't expect to have won there. So we won away at Leeds, we won away at Stoke. You know, we've gone in and had, when it comes to like a top six kind of team, we've been impressive. But unfortunately, and no disrespect meant to any other team, matches that we should have won to be in the playoff pack before this points deduction, we've lost. Losing the last four doesn't put us in a good position. You know, West Bromwich Albion tomorrow night, another tough game. We probably need those 9 points back to be safe. And here's hoping that we can do that before the end of the season, really.
Yeah, it's such a difference, isn't it? And yeah, the West Brom's such a difficult game. But yeah, as you say, with some of the wins you've picked up in the season, it's not out of the realms of possibility that you go and win that.
Exactly. When we're up against the odds, that's when we tend to come out. It's when we're expected to, but it's the way we play. In all honesty, we are a team that counter attacks, and we don't care if we don't get, say, 40% possession, because when we've got the possession, we score goals. We're not a team that goes on, you know, gets on the right foot coming out of the dressing room. Mm-hmm. We don't go after games. We tend to just sit back and then try. If it was a boxer, we'd be a counter puncher.
Yeah. And what's funny about all this is only 4 games ago, you know, before these 4 losses, you went and beat Bristol City, went 8th in the table, so, you know, just outside the playoffs at the start. What's that, end of February, start of March? It's crazy how quickly the season has turned with this penalty.
It's like I say, it's just really unfortunate. It'd be interesting going forward, and I said this on Twitter and stuff. Just I'll look at this financial fair play going forward and see who else gets punished for it.
Mm.
Because there's some teams that need to be looking over the shoulder now. If we're getting done for it, then surely whoever else falls in this bracket will get done for it as well. Mm. And I don't want it to be that way, but you know, it's fair as fair, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. As a positive though, around Birmingham, Che Adams has been nominated for Player of the Season. He was put in the team of the season along with Teemu Pukki and Billy Sharp, who were also nominees. Do you think Che Adams will win Player of the Season, or do you think Billy Sharp, Teemu Pukki will win it?
I think Che Adams has been fantastic. To come from League One and Billy Sharp, Sheffield United. To come in and then score 5 goals last season, I think it was, to, you know, to get 20 this season so far is amazing. And he should be in with the show. I think it'll probably be Pukki though, because, you know, Norwich will probably win the title and then that's where it tends to go. The winner of any kind of trophy tends to be the ones who won the league or anything like that. So if Jay Adams can add another, when does this actually take place? Is this after the season or the actual awarding of the of the award?
That is a good question. From memory, I think it's announced before the end of the season, with a couple of weeks to go. But it's one of them. It should be after the season, really. It's one of them things that annoys me. It's like when they give out Man of the Match with 5 minutes to go. It really annoys me about football.
Yeah. So if Jay Adams can add to his goal tally, then maybe. But my heart says Jay Adams. My head says Pukki.
Okay. Well, I think Billy Sharp will win it. So there you go. You got one for all three. I've got to ask as well. Who do you think will win the championship this season?
I think Norwich. I think they've been probably the most consistent team. I mean, they took 4 points off us. So yeah, I think they've been really good. Leeds have been really good as well. We've got them to play next Saturday after this. So that'll be a really interesting game. When we went there to win at Elland Road was a fantastic result, but they've been really good under Bielsa. I did think, you know, a West Brom or a Swansea or even a Stoke City at the beginning of the season, I'm sure I had them up there on the Championship chatter show that I did briefly. I think Norwich will win it. I think Leeds will come second, and I think West Brom will go in the playoffs.
Okay, yeah, you heard it here first. It's such a great battle, isn't it? Just to watch those three sides. Leeds have wobbled a bit lately, and I thought Leeds would win it, but now it's so hard to call between the three of them. It's going to be great watching, I suppose.
It's just a fantastic league to watch, Anthony, in all honesty. I mean, obviously biased that my team's in it, but just from the last 4 games for my team, you would have said they're going to pick up points in this match, and it's so unpredictable. It's obviously gone against my team, but it's what makes the Championship one of the best leagues in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone can beat anyone on any given day.
The third most watched league in the world as well by TV figures as well. It's incredible.
What's the other two? Is it Premier League and La Liga?
Yeah, and then it's Championship's third, yeah. In TV. Oh, okay. Worldwide, yeah. I've really enjoyed having you on the show tonight. thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
All right. If you want to follow Oliver, you can at Bromiol on Twitter. I'll put a link in the description, as well as following myself at Ant Kendrick. And V2 Sport Network, of course, at V2 Sport Network. I'll put a link to the book. Will be added to this as it's launched as well. Thanks for listening, and goodbye from myself and from Oliver. Goodbye.
Thanks, everyone.